This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 394. Censors ruined my childhood. Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
Are you fully recovered from the national holiday?
I am. What? I think.
You think?
Yeah.
You think or you know?
I think. Therefore, I am.
I don't think so. I'm not sure that that's how that works.
It totally works that way.
Yeah, but I don't think it works
like,
that way.
Like, I think cheese sandwich, therefore I am a cheese sandwich.
See, yeah, no. 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 But what you are...
is awesome and special?
No.
Oh.
Is back!
Yeah,
for
that too.
A new weekly podcast.
I hope you guys enjoyed last week's clip show all about me, and I still to this day do believe that roughage is great because it makes me poop. And it better make you guys poop, too, otherwise you're not doing it right.
And you should consult a physician.
If roughage does not make you poop.
If roughage doesn't help, then consult a physician. That's all we're going to say about roughage, because that was the last podcast.
That was probably my favorite part of that whole clip. I'm like, I did say that, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah, I did.
That show was about everything that you said.
I did. All those
did it.
Things I did.
You did it.
That all got recorded, all those burps.
Yes.
Yeah.
All of them.
I'm not very ladylike, ladies and gentlemen.
No, ladies burp. It's just that we catch everything.
Yeah.
That you do.
Yeah.
So remember that.
All day, every day.
Yep. So just remember that. Because just because I said voice of geese once doesn't mean that I don't have ammunition.
No. Oh, you got enough to keep me in check for years to come.
Yes. So now with that birthday retribution handled, it's time to get back to what we know and love and recovered from our mini vacation. Games and stuff.
Yay!
Boy, do we have a bunch to talk about. First of all, I want to talk about Neversoft closing.
Tear.
Well, not really a big tear because
it's a little one that just trails down your cheek just like, a little bit, yeah. But then like absorbs in your cheek.
It's like one of those, you know, adult moment, like
it's like we're growing up.
Yeah, yeah. So if you weren't aware, Neversoft, which many of us know from the Tony Hawk franchise, because pretty much damn near every Tony Hawk game that I played and enjoyed was made by Neversoft. I still think that 2 was, like, the most solid, like, Tony Hawk game that I enjoyed, like, flat out.
I don't play games where you have to sit on a block of wood with wheels and do tricks.
Wait, you used to play SSX like crazy.
I wasn't very good at it, and I played Wave Race 64 like a champ.
Oh, Wave Race.
No one could touch this. Nah, 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 nah. Nah, 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 nah. Can't touch this.
Wave Race was the bomb.
Oh my god, I wish they would bring that back.
They need to. They need to. Of all the games Nintendo really needs to like stop
like, we're
and like bring
Brawl,
back.
Brawl, and that's great. And we got Star Fox for the 3DS, and that's fine. I'll let that go.
Smash Brothers. Okay, cool. I get you. I'm with you on that. And we know that we're getting, you know, Link. I have pre-ordered Hyrule Warriors, even though I'm trying to curb my pre-order habit. I'm like, but I really want to play Hyrule Warriors. I really do.
So you can whoop my ass in that, too?
No, it's not about whooping your ass in that.
It is about whooping that
no,
ass.
No, Hyrule Warriors, it plays like a Dynasty Warriors
oh,
game.
God.
Did you not pay attention to E3 at all?
I did.
Are you sure?
I just remember the fighting.
Yeah, no, Omega Force worked with Nintendo to create Hyrule Warriors. So you have different warriors that are going to lead clans and go
fight.
Yes. There's co-op. So there's cooperative.
Yes.
You hear that?
And competitive.
No. Did you hear how cooperative?
Instead of just one general and a massive horde, you can have two generals and a massive horde.
Correct.
Okay.
Going towards a goal.
Okay.
So it's not me versus you. It's you and me versus them.
Oh.
Cooperative.
It's us against the world, yo.
Right. So Hyrule Warriors, I did pre-order, but NeverSoft has always like had a little warm place in my heart because Tony Hawk was, I think, the first game that I played on my PS1 emulator on my Mac.
Emulator?
Yeah, because I was late to the Sony game. I jumped on the PlayStation 2, not so much the 1.
I know.
But this was back in the day when they were basically CD-ROMs, but they were just black discs. So if you had an emulator on your PC or on your Mac,
you could
and
fake
a controller,
it.
You could play them. So I had an
it.
Emulator, and that's what I played my PS1 games on, and a couple of my PS2 games on, until I finally was like, I'll just get one.
Meh.
And basically it was when they got super slim and cheap, and that's when I picked one up.
I remember my plight with the PS2. I had to buy two of them.
Yeah.
Because one caught on fire.
Yep.
And then the other one lost its vision and couldn't see.
It's bad when your systems catch on fire.
Yeah, well, if someone hadn't used one of those, the things that are meant to, like, clean out the crap between your keys, the air, the compressurized air.
Somebody used compressed air in your PlayStation?
Yes.
Yeah, that would catch it on fire.
And it wasn't me, for anyone who thought that. I didn't do that. Somebody else did.
That would definitely
caught on fire.
That would definitely make it catch on fire.
Yep.
So there's that. But hey, you know, you live and you learn. But NeverSoft closed its doors, and while we said it's one of those, you know, sad moments, but not, you know, tears streaming down your face, the studio isn't completely gone. It's been, the majority of the team members have been folded into Infinity Ward, and EA announced this months ago that they were going to be moving the teams over because there were a lot of great skill sets between the NeverSoft team and needs that EA had in Infinity Ward. And the NeverSoft team even worked with Infinity Ward on the last Call of Duty game, Ghost. So it's just the final official NeverSoft is no more happened on the 11th. And one of the things that I thought was coolest about this and why it wasn't such a, oh my god, NeverSoft is gone, but a sobering adult moment, was the way that they went out. You know, for many of us, the way that THQ got closed is still very sad.
Sensitive, tender.
And sensitive.
Vittles. Tender vittles.
Subject.
Agreed.
You know, and, but NeverSoft took their pierced eyeball statue and team members fired lit arrows at it to catch it on fire and disintegrate it and burn it to the ground.
Very Viking.
Very Viking. Very badass. And I thought, you know what? If we're going to put something out to pasture and it's NeverSoft, which, you know, was all about the, at the time, avant-garde, outside the norm games, that's kind of the best way to do that. So I thought that it was pretty cool, lighting it on fire. And there are a couple of pictures on the net that you can find. I think they even posted it on their website. But, like, Polygon had a couple, had an article about it. So did Kotaku, all the big guys. But I just thought that it was, like, a boss-ass way to be like, all right, so we're closing this chapter, and we're now all Infinity Ward in here. Here's the proof. Like, we set it afire.
We set it ablaze.
It's the end. I thought that was fucking cool. So, you know, pour a little out for the homies, but congratulations on, you know, merging and being Infinity Ward now and bringing bigger and better things to the things that Infinity is going to touch moving forward. So that was kind of cool.
I agree.
But also kind of sad. And it also reminded me, too, because, like, I was looking back, and whenever I thought NeverSoft, I always thought the Tony Hawk games, but I forgot that NeverSoft was, like, working on the last few Guitar Hero games.
Yep.
Not to throw salt on anything, but, you know. There's that.
See, maybe when we get to a point where Esh, you know, has run its course, we should set Esh things on fire.
We don't have a lot of Esh things to set on fire.
I know.
I'm not lighting any of my consoles, any of my TVs, or any of the shirts on fire.
So there's
maybe, like, old business cards.
Set ablaze.
Which I'm pretty sure you can't do, because if they caught in the wind, they could set other things on fire.
All right, never mind. I thought
so maybe we made, like, a bonfire pit on the beach, if they could, like...
Bonfire!
But otherwise, no, we won't be setting things ablaze.
Effigies.
To say goodbye to Esh.
It's so hard to say goodbye to Escher Day.
Really?
Yeah.
You did that?
Yeah.
All right. So you're going to own that?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been recorded into history.
But on the Salt Guitar Hero, like, type of things, I want to take a second to say congratulations to a homeboy of ours.
Yeah.
John Drake.
Oh, my God, dude.
John Drake is a homeboy to anybody in the industry, and if you're in the industry and you don't know John Drake, you're not really in the industry. I hate to break it to you, but you're not.
You're doing it wrong.
You're doing it so wrong, and you should, like, reevaluate and make better life choices.
You should have pizzaed instead of french fried.
Right. You really should have. Really should have. But John has been a friend of ours in the show almost since we began. We were youngins back in the day, the first time that we met with the team at Harmonix.
Oh, God, wasn't I like 22?
I think so.
Holy fuck, that was like 8 years ago.
It was back in the day.
Maybe that is intense.
Might have been 23.
Still, that's like 7 years. Yeah,
it was back when you were like not mature.
I'm still not mature?
Yeah, really. Anyway, so back in the day, met up with them, started running around, covering everything from Harmonix, trying to invade their offices when they weren't looking, to play with stuff and touch things.
Trying to work for them.
Yeah, trying to work for them for a while. We did that too.
We did.
Both at different times, which is really funny.
But
we have been huge friends with the entire team there, and so it was announced earlier this week, not by John, but by the PlayStation team, that John is going to be joining them. And actually, I believe he's in California as we do this podcast. That's how fast that shit moves.
It's like noontime
there. So when we talked a little while ago about, you know, his letter on Tumblr and how amazing that was, and just sweet and honest about growing up in the industry and looking forward to the next adventure, next adventure's here, and we couldn't be more happy. So congratulations to John.
You're a man now.
PlayStation team, you're getting one of the coolest motherfuckers in the industry.
He's a badass motherfucker.
He is. And
he is so cool.
We couldn't be more happy. So
I geek out every time I see him, and then I get over it, and then I walk away and geek again.
All the way around. There's
like, oh my God, we just hung out with him for a little bit.
There's no better person to go drinking with and or hug.
From that dude right there.
Any trade show. I'm going to say it. I'm calling it.
Really?
John Drake.
Really?
John Drake is a good hug.
Okay. I always got nervous to touch him.
Oh, see? That's your problem. No, you gotta go in. Squish. John Drake is a good hug. Also, pours a mean drink. So, congratulations, our friend. Looking forward to the next journey, steps, adventure. It's gonna be awesome. So, with that said, let's talk about some other stuff in games. We actually, surprise, surprise, played the same game.
Well, because it's single player, you can't.
Correct. But also not on the same system.
Nope.
So, this week we're talking about Valiant Hearts.
The Great War.
I played the game on the Xbox One.
And I played it on my PS4.
And I gotta tell you, we saw the trailer from UB at E3.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting to me, and the first question that I had, and I think we even put it up in the Twitter chat as we were live tweeting the media briefings, was the narration and the way that it was done. I couldn't tell if the narration was done by the dog or some other character in the game. And I haven't finished the game yet.
Neither have I at this point. I'm in chapter 3. I know I'm a little bit ahead of you.
You're a little bit ahead of me.
Probably like an hour or so from where I saw you leave off. I'm about an hour ahead of you.
But I have to say that I'm enjoying this game way more than I thought I would. Now, at the time, I said it looks great and the story seems really emotional and evocative.
Yes.
And after playing the levels that I've played, that statement is definitely true.
It's very accurate.
But I was surprised because I thought the gameplay was going to be one thing and it's a complete other. So when I saw the game at first, I thought that it was going to be an action platformer.
Oh, well, there is action.
It's not an action platformer. It's a puzzle solver.
Yes, it is. Well, there is action and there is platforming to a light degree. That is not, it's puzzles.
It's a puzzle game.
Puzzle and collection, which we know I'm all about them collectibles. And there's over 100, there's about 100 of them.
Yeah, no, I'm not getting
all
the collectibles.
I'm getting all of them.
I'm not. I already missed like to.
That's when you go back in time.
No. I'm not going back in time.
But yeah, and the game was developed from Ubisoft Montpellier, so that's their French area in southern France, where there's French people that do French things, like eat baguettes and say French things.
As opposed to Ubisoft Montreal or Quebec, which is also French, where they do French things.
And say French things. But they're not southern France. They're like northern Canadian French.
I can't keep up with Canada's.
But anyway, I know the game was powered by the UbiArt framework. It's gorgeous, an in-house engine that was also used on Rayman Origins and Legends, and I think also Child of Light, which I've been debating on actually playing.
You need to play Child of Light. I'll tell you right now, you need to play Child of Light.
All right, then I'm buying it.
Yeah, no, you don't even need to think about it. You need to play Child of Light.
Buying it.
It's so up your alley, Panda. It's ridiculous.
It's in my queue on my PS4 to buy, and I was like, do I get this? Or do I get Outlast? Because they're both up my alley.
For Valiant Hearts, it was between Valiant Hearts and Contrast.
I'm surprised you didn't go Contrast.
I almost did, but I remembered how much I thought about Valiant Hearts when I first saw it at Ubisoft at their media briefing. And I thought, you know, I really want to spend more time with this. Or did I see it at the Expo? All the media briefings are running together right now.
But going back to the narration for Valiant Hearts.
Yeah, narration.
I feel like that if the narration was done by the dog, like, that would be really, really cool. However, I know that this creation of this whole game came from letters that were written by actual people during this war. So I don't...
Well, I'm just saying the trailer that they showed.
It totally looked like it could have been.
The way that they positioned it and had the narrator talking about not being able to tell the story and then the dog bowed his head.
Yeah.
You really thought that, it's going to be the story from the point of view of the one character that doesn't talk. And that's why it's this kind of grandiose voice. And I thought, this is a perfect fit. And I love this idea of...
Well, I mean, all the great parts of the story were all parts that the dog was involved in.
The dog is involved in.
So, like, it you could see how...
You don't go anywhere without the dog. And the dog is instrumental in certain
places. The dog is always working with one of the three people.
Yeah.
That you really kind of control, which...
So, let's talk about them.
Yeah.
And talk about the mechanic. Because I think the use of the dog in switching between characters, I thought was a very unique approach. And
I feel like we have to talk a little bit about the plot, too.
Well, we kind of ought to.
All right, so...
We can't just say the Great War and be like, it's a war!
It was the Great War of 1914 that took place between France and Germany because, you know, the Germans have their way of thinking and the French have their way of thinking, and sometimes it's all we and whatever the German word for yes is, or the German... Nine. I mean, I know that word. Or, like, the French, no. Nine and no. But anyway, Germany had declared war on Russia in 1914, and France was like, you leave them Russians alone, and they went to go help out the Russians. Well, at this point, the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, you know that band? Yeah, Archduke guy. He had been assassinated.
That just dawned on you.
I was like, wait a minute, I know that name.
That just hit you when you were doing your research to talk about this game.
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute, there's a band called that. And they're from Get Out of Town. Get Out of Town.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. So anticipating the war, all the German people who were, like, living in France was like, yeah, you kind of got to go.
Hey, at least they didn't put them in internment camps. They just said, get out.
They were like, you just have to leave France. So that's where the story really zooms in, and you see this family of four. You see this older gentleman. His name's Emil. You see a German with blonde hair that you don't actually see his eyes. That's Carl. He is married to Emil's daughter, Marie, and Marie has just had their son, Victor.
Yep.
So when Carl is
asked to leave the country and forced to join
the German army. And, you don't know that right off the bat, but you know something's going to happen. And no sooner, maybe a week or so after Carl had to be exported.
Had to get out.
Emil got drafted into the French army.
Yep.
So you go...
Marie loses everybody.
Except for the Victor. Baby. And, you know, so Emil, who is an older gentleman at this point, and, you know, has seen his fair share of fighting already,
yep,
has to go back into training, and gets thrown back into battle, and literally the first unit he's ever in gets utterly wiped out. This dude takes so many beatings.
Emil's a badass. Well, first of all, everybody that's in this game that I've played up till now, and I just crested chapter 3, is a badass.
Yeah.
But what I love most is that everyone is designed in the way that the game plays out is it plays out as almost a motion comic, the way that it is designed.
Yep.
And so the characters look as if they are a paper comic design cutout that is animated throughout the scene that you control. So it's not necessarily the watercolor style of, like, Okamiden and a Super Street Power. Some of
the backgrounds from, like, Little Big Planet.
Yeah. And that, one, engrossed me right off the bat because I love the visual style. But then as you start taking over different characters playing through the plot, it then just reinforces almost the era and the environment because of the way that they're drawn. They're drawn very much like political cartoons of the time.
Yes.
Which, you know, if you're familiar with that... Which I'm sure were
reference points for their development. Absolutely.
But if you're familiar with that, it just adds a little bit more value, I think, to your gameplay. So, hat tip to the UB team on that, because it definitely helps make it even more engrossing. And the atmosphere that's created by the music and the way that it's used, yes, and the way that narrative plus gameplay is used, you really feel more like you're playing a choose-your-own-adventure, truly, even though you're not.
You're
solving puzzles. It's very linear.
And I mean, and I love in the game, while you're playing, they're playing with 2D and 3D with, you know, in-depth 3D, as in going into something, and then it, like, overlays or, like, light, like, opaques out, so you can see.
Yeah, it's definitely a 2.5D game, is the best way I would describe it, because it is, at its core, a side-scrolling puzzle game, which also, you know, in watching the trailer, I wasn't sure if the entirety of the game was that way, or if just from the trailer, certain aspects were, but it definitely is, like, an homage to your traditional 2D games, in that it's a side-scroller.
Yeah.
And the way that you get that 2.5, like Panda said, is that there are times where you have to go into a building, and so it's moving back on a plane.
Yeah. Which I liked.
I do, too. I think that, you know, it allows me to stay in kind of the motif and the era of the game. And if you think about, you know, comics, it's like going back a page. At least in my mind, that's the way that works. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. I really don't care. But I really have been enjoying the game, so much so that it actually pulled me out of completing Wolfenstein.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to finish it, because don't get me wrong, Wolfenstein's getting real good.
Oh, I bet.
It's real good. And I just want to, like, the only thing I would add about Wolfenstein is I feel like there needs to be more sex with Anya. But, you know, that's just me.
Going back
no, to... No, seriously, you... yeah, like, I banged her on a table.
Okay.
Yeah, half clothes on.
At least you're being classy.
I'm nothing if not classy.
So, moving back to the Valiant Heart character. So, after Emil got redrafted back into the army, and after he got wounded and captured by the Germans, he then got forced to have to cook for them. And his captor, he finds out...
He got captured.
And was forced to have to cook.
Be a cook.
And you finally meet the big antagonist, which Colonel was
Baron... Von Dorf.
Yep, Baron Von Dorf. Who, to me, kind of comes off as, like, a dastardly... Dick Dastardly, whatever his name was, from the Wacky Racers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's very animated... You know, because they don't actually, like, there's very little dialogue, though there is dialogue spoken. Like,
Almost like the rabbit language with a hint of a word here and there. That's
Emil,
used.
Hurry up.
But I actually Emil, like help. That
because
it makes then the narrative that does happen have more value.
Value, absolutely. So while he is, you know, under the control of Baron Von Dorf, stuff is going on, and in a twist of fate, he ends up meeting another character Freddy, who, by the way, is a black man. Not that that's a, and he's an American. Because they talk about in during the war that people were volunteering to help France, you know, with all this war stuff. And you find out that Freddy had been living in France with his wife. And on the day of their wedding, there was a German bombing raid.
Yep.
And it killed her.
Yep.
And it drove Freddy to want vengeance against Von Dorf, because as the bomb raid was happening, Freddy happened to see the flag that was flying on the dirigible.
That did it and knows that it's
that he Von knows Dorf's it's Von Dorf. So he's on a quest for vengeance against the man who stole his life and his wife.
If you could imagine Liam Neeson in another Taken movie, except this time they bombed his daughter, they didn't just take his daughter. Like, that's what Carl is doing.
That is exactly
one man vengeance.
He is Liam Neeson-ing.
He's Liam Neeson-ing this shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. And then, of course, you do come across a dog who they don't actually give you a name for the dog character. But
I call him Awesome Sauce, because this dog is the... Like, if my dog would just, like, I would point and be like, Murr! And he would go through a hole.
At this point where Emil is captured, and the first... Because there's a bombing that happens at the camp that Emil has been, you know, prisoned at, and he gets barricaded into the mess hall, and it's the dog that you manipulate as the player to bury him out, and literally that dog, who's a German dog,
you
mind
you. Dig him out, by the way.
Yeah, dug him out.
Yep.
And
but only because you gave him water.
Yeah,
you solved the puzzle to give him water, so he knows that you're nice.
Yeah, so you do really nice.
And you get an achievement, by the way, for petting the dog.
Yes, you do.
Which is cool.
I thought it was great. But he's a German dog, so it's really great to have him on your side because he does allow to help you distract German guards so that you can get the advantage, but I'll get to that later.
Yeah, and that's a great mechanic, by the way.
I love that mechanic.
I need to use it more.
So after you meet Freddy a little down the way, you also meet Anna, who's a Belgian medical student. She's not a full nurse yet, but she does devote her time to battlefield because she realizes it's her calling. She also, for a different reason, is tracking Von Dorf because Von Dorf kidnapped her dad and is forcing her dad to make advanced war weapons for him. One of them that you fight at the end of chapter 2, which is a dick. It took me forever to do. I was getting so... I thought I was going to rage quit, but I didn't.
Oh, is that the gas one?
No, it's the tank.
Oh, you have problems with the tank?
I had, just like you had brought the tank that I helped you do.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, that tank. That tank was an ass.
That was an ass tank.
It was ass tank.
But anyway, so you find that all these characters are kind of, you know, interweaving their stories together.
And they're all after this one
guy. Who always mysteriously, up until a point, now mind you, I'm only in an hour into chapter 3, so I have not finished, so I can't speak to the ending. However, I do believe that if we're following a story structure, that we're just in the rising action. We're about to hit climax town, and we're going to get resolution.
Aww,
and,
yeah.
Like, we're getting into the meats and the potatoes of the stew here.
And just knowing how emotionally things have been going, I have a feeling that it's going to be a bittersweet resolution.
I do not feel we're going to get the happily ever after that we'd like.
Happily ever after all the way around.
But when you listen to stories about war and history, not all of them were happy endings in sunshine and rainbows. So I feel like if we got that in this game, it would detract from the notes.
I don't disagree. Now, I want to talk about the puzzling aspect of it. Because I will say that the puzzle aspect in this game, while the puzzles are difficult because there are puzzles where you have to retrace your step, there's a QTE puzzle sequence that pops up when you play with Anna, which I think is a very unique implementation of the QTE, to be honest with you.
I agree.
And I think that it's one of the few QTEs that actually add to the game as opposed to detract from the game. We'll talk about that in a second.
Oh, my God. So you've done the driving, right?
Yes.
To the freaking music?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So how long did it take you to realize that it was to the music?
Oh, no. I knew right off the bat it was to the music. And I got my achievements for navigating without getting hit.
Let's talk about that. We'll talk about some of the other mechanics as well. But I feel that the puzzle solving in this game, while it is complex, it's not difficult. So it's not make you want to rage quit type difficult, which Braid did.
It wasn't like the puzzles that you got in Assassin's Creed, like those pieces of truth that you had to navigate through. Like they didn't get as heady as that.
The last set were easier to deal with because they just gave you the circuit connector ones that you had to do as opposed
to. No, I mean the ones that were like the chess pieces where it's like you had to.
Those ones are only difficult
because I don't play chess.
Correct. If you played chess,
I hate chess.
It wasn't a problem.
I'll never play chess. Ever.
I'll play checkers with you.
I will fucking play checkers and Chinese checkers till the cows come home.
I suck at Chinese
and turn
checkers.
It into freaking burgers on my plate. You put a chessboard in front of me, and I'm gonna flip the fucking table. I'm telling you right now, do not test me, because I don't want to flip tables and get kicked out of establishments. But I will do it to make the point. I will flip tables with chess on.
Anyway.
Anyway.
But what if we use chess pieces and we just play checkers?
That's... No.
Why not?
No.
Same amount of pieces.
No. Like, and I even hate that in anime, like in an anime that I watched.
Wait, so you probably don't watch Persona at all?
No!
Okay.
No, I don't!
Okay.
And, like, the anime that you have told me months ago about, No Game, No Life, like, literally the first battle that they have is, like, a chess game. I'm like, this game!
But wasn't that an awesome game, though?
Of all games to have right, to play.
We're going off on tangents. We can come back to anime.
But fuck chess! Fuck it! I'm sorry, chess lovers, but it's not a game for me. Anyway, going back to Valiant Hearts.
We're talking puzzle mechanics now.
Talk about
the music driving QT.
Yes. So there are two occasions, because when you start playing more as Anna, you find out that she's done a lot of traveling to get to the part of France that you're the last characters you're in arc, because you don't really get her story until the start of chapter two. Like, you see her a bit in chapter one, but, like, you don't understand what her pivotal role is.
And it took me a hot second to realize that she wasn't Marie in a different outfit, like, going after Vengeance.
No.
It took me a second, because, like,
she wasn't going to leave Victor by himself on the farm.
When she's introduced, I didn't know that the baby wasn't in the back of the car.
I mean, she was wearing big enough driving pants that she could have just put the baby in her
pants. And she was blonde, so, like, for a hot second, I was like,
it's
Marie to the rescue. But then they explain, like,
it's
this is Anna, and I'm like,
yeah, it's Anna. And not Anna from Frozen.
No. Different Anna.
But anyway, so...
Although, I feel like if she just let a few things go...
She could, yeah.
She might have been a little happier.
Go ahead. So what happens is, when you finally get her story, you find out that she's in Belgium, her dad's like, don't come here, and she's like, F that, daddy. I'm going to go help. So I'm going to bust out of my beautiful, like, apartment here in Belgium and go to France. And you have to, you know, get your car working. And the minute that you get your car working, like, people just, like, jump onto your car because they're all trying to find ways to get out of Belgium.
Right. Well, it's not just that. It's that as you're playing the game, the French people...
Yep.
Commandeer all the taxis.
All the taxis.
So they take every motor vehicle. So as soon as it can move, they commandeer it so that they can go into battle. It's not about taking them so that they can get out of town. They're heading to the front
line. They're going to fight.
So there's a puzzle level that you have to solve that basically has Anna fix up a taxi that has been abandoned.
And then it gets commandeered.
She starts to roll out, and then a bunch of French soldiers
guys
jump on board. And they start rolling.
So
she
out to France,
being the wheelman.
So as you're doing this, like at first it seems like you're just gonna drive and try to avoid, you know, like other cars, which seem kind of. But then all of a sudden there are bombs.
Yeah, bombs and cars and barrels.
Yep. And you realize that you are navigating to an overture, and I can't remember which one it was. Was it Bach?
I forget which overture it is.
But it's the one with the cannons. And you do this twice.
Not the 1812 overture.
No.
No.
Because we're in 1914.
I know. But I'm just saying.
But anyway, and you do this not once, but twice. And there are two different songs that you do this to.
And what's interesting is that the obstacles appear in different, basically, columns. So if you think of the road as, like, the highway in a rock band game... Different obstacles appear on each section of the highway.
And I mean, and you'll get the visual cue of a bomb, like, as a grayed out, like, swirl, like something's
going
to drop.
Larger,
and it gets larger and darker the closer it is to hitting. So you have the chance to maneuver yourself out of the way of those bombs in cars.
But you only have a few seconds.
Yeah, you really do.
Because some fall faster than others. And it's not just a single bomb that falls at any time. There's usually several bombs and then sometimes a barrel. Or two vehicles coming from two different directions.
Yep.
That, you in the middle.
Yep. But you do get achievements for,
Yeah, I haven't done a complete run yet without being hit.
Honestly, the first one, I just was just trying very hard to avoid being hit. I didn't realize that I was doing it to the music until, like, the last one where it was do-do-do. And I was like, oh, wait a minute, there's a rhythmic pattern here.
Yep.
That I didn't rightly know. So then when it came to the second one, I'm like, I know exactly what's going to happen now. Here comes the next one. And, I mean, it's just... I feel like Ubisoft, who has always been really good with their stories. I mean, wherever you go, look, they slap you hard in the face with content and story and history.
Does not disappoint when it comes to story.
Ever. You know, so I
mean... Sometimes camera angle, but never story.
But never story. And I feel like... Ubisoft Montpelier just owned it. Like you feel connected to these people, and you want justice. You want justice for Freddy. You want Freddy to just curb stomp Von Dorf in the face.
Seriously, you do. You want that, and you want Carl to get back.
You want Carl to hand Victor like a crowbar to just like pound into Von Dorf's ball sack.
Baby.
Like, baby gets born, and is he there for it? No. He sees pictures of his son standing, and he's like...
And not because he doesn't want to be there.
Exactly. It wasn't like he was like, peace out, bitch. He was all like, I want to stay here, but I'm German, and they're telling me I have to leave.
It's so well done, and the gameplay is really strong. Like, if you enjoy puzzle games, like I said, the puzzles are challenging. You really do have to stop and think. And one thing that I like is that you do get hints, but they're time-released hints.
Yep, so you can't you'll get one, and then a minute after that, another one.
Yeah, will be available for you to decide that you want, so it doesn't just give you the hint flat out.
You can choose to look at them if you want to.
And I like that as well.
The only thing that sucks about those hints is, like with that particular tank level that we were talking about, because it's timed, like you have to do things in the right order at the right time, or you fail it and you have to redo it, is that they want to give you hints every time you fail, but you don't have enough time to look at the hint to do things right. So, like, for boss battles, and I'm using air quotes here because, you know, every encounter with a puzzle is like a boss battle. So you're not really boss battling, really. And
kind of.
Not exactly. Like, I mean, yeah, there's, the throwing. And there's a lot of throwing, like, bombs and distraction and a lot of stealth.
Dropping bombs on your moms.
Stealth is a big key in this game, too.
Yeah, but it's cutely done.
Yeah.
Like, it took me a hot second to realize that I needed to be stealthy.
Well, because half the time Emil either has, like, a ladle for soup or a shovel. So it's not like he has, like, a gun. And, like, all of them have some type of attribute to them. Like, Emil can dig, which is why he has the shovel for a lot of times. So sometimes you have to navigate and dig through dirt that have, like, bombs in them. Which kind of
sucks. Yeah, don't hit the bombs.
Don't hit the bombs. And then sometimes when you're Freddy, you have pliers. So you can cut through barbed wire.
You have bolt cutters.
You have bolt cutters.
Yes.
So you can cut through barbed wire.
Barbed wire and rope and chains.
I mean, I think the only one who does not come off with any particular addition to their character is, I mean, Anna's the medic, so she can heal. She has the QTE thing.
Yeah, Carl just has brute strength, to my knowledge.
Yeah, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he could just sneak up behind someone and just, like, punch them and, like, their heads explode. I'm just kidding. There's actually, they're really tasteful about death in this game.
Yeah, everybody just gets knocked out. They don't really die. Even the people who get blown up just end up keeling over and look like they've just been knocked out.
Yeah. But I mean,
they're strewn all over the place. So you can't miss the fact that you are in a war zone.
You're never safe.
So you're kind of surrounded by death, but it's not gruesome. So
right.
I think, at least for me, I notice and I feel the impact of that more.
I think I do too.
Because of that.
Because they want you to observe the background and be a part of the background.
Whereas,
they're not just trying to push in your face, look at all this blood and guts everywhere,
exactly.
Oh my god.
I feel like if it was gory all over the place, I'd just tune out the gore.
Right.
So I tune out the background and the body count. But like, there's one mission where you're Anna and you have to crawl down to this area, and for the first like 3 seconds that I was crawling through the area, I didn't realize that it was just
bodies.
A ditch full of bodies.
Yep.
And when I crawled back through, and to get a collectible, I realized it was, and I stopped for a second.
Yep.
And then I went back to the game to do what I needed to do, whereas if, like, everybody in that pit was covered in blood and gore, I never would have looked at any of the bodies. I would have just got the collectible and moved on. So, again, tipping my hat, I think that this game is just so well balanced and presented in such a fantastic way that it's totally worth the $15, guys.
Yeah. I mean, I got it for free for my birthday.
Yes.
But it was
some of us, it wasn't our birthday, so we bought it.
Yeah. But if I hadn't received it as a birthday present, I would pony up the $15 twice.
I don't know about twice, but...
Like, if the game was $30, I would still buy it.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. It's a really, really fantastic game. And, you know, I'm a fan of puzzlers and have been for a long time. Typically, what I play mobily are all puzzle games because I like things that keep my mind sharp.
Right.
But Valiant Hearts is not only a sharp game and witty game, but it really is a very emotional game as well, without, like, beating you over the head with sap, which I think sometimes is the easy out for games. Like, okay, so we're gonna go for making you cry, and you can do that, but sometimes I think you go so hard at, like, trying to make a story that makes you cry that you miss the boat, and then it doesn't.
Yep. It tells you you're gonna get ribs, and then you don't get ribs.
Yeah. And so then you're like, where the fuck are my ribs?
Where are the ribs? No ribs,
because you said ribs. So
you said ribs. And
so somebody needs to get ribs, because they said ribs, I heard ribs, we all agreed ribs.
Ribs are coming. Do not George R. R. Martin me. Where the fuck are the ribs?
Seriously.
Where the ribs at?
Where the ribs at? So, I gotta tell you, this game definitely would not suck as a gift.
Absolutely not.
But you owe it to yourself if you like puzzle games, pick it up. Like I said, it's worth the $15. It's $14.99.
If you enjoy Ubisoft narrative...
If you just enjoy good narrative, like, it, I don't care if you like Ubi narrative, it's just good narrative.
Well, I'm just saying because Ubi's really good about their, they're all about the narrative.
Yeah, but if you're just about good narrative, you don't care what house it comes from.
True.
But true. It's really good, and I, seriously, Ubi put their foot in it. I'm really enjoying the game. I will finish it. I will then go back to Wolfenstein, and then I will go back to Watch Dogs eventually. Gonna happen.
I finally uploaded my season's pass for Watch Dogs and got all my additional content. Still haven't played the game.
What the hell, Panda?
I don't know.
Like, you finally hooked up your PlayStation.
I finally hooked up my PlayStation 4, finally put the disc in, did all the downloading,
and
what did I do? I went and downloaded my free copy of Valiant Hearts and played that. But they're both from Ubisoft.
So, you know, hey, Ubi's getting taken care of.
Yeah. One way or another.
But...
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
I really love the character development. The style is fantastic. The puzzles are really challenging. It's a really good game. I'm very surprised. Like, I thought it was going to be a little kitschy, to be honest with you, when I first saw the trailer. But I'm happily surprised. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it. So, if you have a PlayStation 4... If you have an Xbox One, I believe it's also available for previous gen systems too, on PS3 and Xbox 360.
It is available for, let me look. We are looking at PS3, PS4, Windows, yep. Xbox Arcade, 360, and Xbound.
Yeah, so it's across the systems. You definitely ought to check it out. Definitely ought to check it out. Also, this week, not getting to the full review, but I had spent some time with Wargaming.net when I was at E3. We talked a little bit about World of Tanks Blitz, which is their iOS app.
Going for the Super Tank Blitz! Tank Blitz!
And it's on my iOS device, guys. So, first ever Wargaming review from Esh incoming. I know we promised it for a while because we were like, we'll find it. It's going to happen. They're going to come to a console, or they're going to come to a platform that we do cover, because, you know, I don't PC game anymore. I'm retired from that in my life. But Blitz is out on iOS. I've got it on my iPad, so I will be talking about it probably on the podcast next week, but you'll definitely see a written review on egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. So it's coming. It's going down. It's going to be awesome. So I think Pan and I are both in agreement.
Yep.
You gotta play Valiant.
You do.
Valiant Hearts. You got to.
You do.
Really do.
You owe yourself.
You really do. And I'll let you guys all know about Contrast coming up soon. Because I'm trying to do a balance between, like, a big title
and a little smaller title.
And an independent release.
I think that's a good idea.
Wow. Valiant Hearts isn't a big title. It's from a big house, so I think that counts. Contrast is up next, as is World of Tanks Blitz.
Okay.
Tanks! I'm gonna blow shit up, guys! Blowing it up! Because I already told you that I was pretty damn impressed with World of Warships, and it almost made me want to get a PC system that could play the game. Almost. Because I love being able to build out war machines.
And you love mechanized stuff. You are all
about
making shit.
I love the mechanized stuff. Like, the thing that I like about RPGs are the skill trees. I love working in skill trees. I love taking earn points and beefing up my character.
Hyping your shit.
I love that. And so when I can translate that into machinery, that makes even more sense to me. You know, it's one of the things that I lost time in Gran Turismo was spending time beefing up my car, not so much running races. And then I got to a point where finally I had to run the bigger, badder races in order to do the soups that I wanted to do. And I was like, fuck this. And I tossed the table. But I love working in skill trees. I don't like turn-based.
I know you don't.
Okay, that's the only thing I don't like. But I love working in skill trees, and I love being able to customize my machinery, whether that's my gun, my car, my tank, my warship. But everything that I saw in World of Warships was gorgeous, and the strategy behind winning the level also appealed to me. And the fact that, you know, it's not turn-based, it's all action because it's live and you firing. Like, almost made me want to get a new machine because my PC is so old. I'm pretty sure it's still running, like, Windows Me.
Oh, my.
No, I'm sorry. It's running Vista. It's running some Vista version. I'm sure it's not the updated one, but without the being plugged into power, it has, like, 3 minutes of battery before it dies. So, it's old. It definitely can't run it, but... more game stuff coming next week. Right now we're going to flip the script and jump into some anime stuff.
Yep.
Because we have a couple of big ones we have to talk about. Number one, Sailor Moon Crystal. So, here's what happened. I watched the first episode.
Have they released the second one yet?
I think by the time this podcast goes out to people, the second one will be out.
Okay.
Watch the first one. Now, I watched OG Sailor Moon through to fruition. I did not watch the subsequent S.
So wait, did you watch? So you watched Sailor Moon. So you didn't
watch Sailor Moon. I didn't watch R. S. Nobody hooked me up with R. Nobody hit me up with S. No one hooked me up with any
stars.
Correct. I don't know any of that shit.
Okay, because in R we got the Alan and Anne aliens with the tree.
Nope.
And then in S we got Fisheye, Hawkeye. And the Starlights.
Nope.
Oh.
Don't know them.
Well, they were...
Never got the hookup.
They were chick warriors, like Amazon chick warriors from space, who were looking for their princess, who they thought was on Earth. So they thought the best way to figure it out was to go to Earth and look like guys and be a boy band and sing concerts all the time, thinking they would lure their princess out.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, so they lived life as boys until they transformed into
girls.
Women.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no. I wish I had watched that, but I did not, in fact, watch that.
So you don't know anything about Crystal Tokyo or Mistress Nine?
No. Nope.
Man, you are missing out.
Yeah, no.
And Galaxia?
Somebody was going to hook me up with that, and then it didn't happen.
I'm sorry.
Casting aspersions.
I deserve that.
Casting hard aspersions in that direction.
I watched the first episode.
Can I finish my thought, please, and thank you?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Sorry.
So I'm coming to Crystal ridiculously clean. Because I haven't watched those other things. I only know my OG run of Sailor Moon.
Got it.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
So I watched the first episode of Crystal. Because I'm like, I gotta try it. Pretty much my freaking newsfeed on Facebook was blowing up. Everyone was like, everybody's gonna be watching the World Cup. Me, I'm gonna be watching Sailor Moon. Squee face! Whatever.
Sailor Moon Crystal movie night.
Seriously. There were, like, people who were...
screening parties.
Like, putting up posts about the outfits that they were going to be wearing to their screening parties. I was like, okay, guys. It's, like, a little bit nerdy for me, but, like, okay, cool. Do your thing.
If I could have found my Sailor Moon locket from the 90s, I would totally...
Didn't I buy you that locket? The one that made all the noises?
That opened up and you got to press the Silver Moon Crystal, which was pink.
And it played the story, the song for the transformation.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And I used to do the animation every time that it
Yeah, you used to do the dance. So the
and my friend Maggie had the crescent wand, and then later she got the scepter.
That's
that
right. She did have the wand. I forgot
And she had
that.
The scepter.
I forgot.
The first scepter.
So anyway... watch the first episode, and my initial reaction, and, like, knee-jerk was, I didn't remember Serena being such a fucking crybaby.
And she, so I can interject here, because we know I'm a Mooney.
You are a Mooney.
But I've also never watched it subbed before. So, when they made the announcement, the original Japanese
Wait,
voice...
Wait, you never watched Sailor Moon subbed?
I'd never watched it subbed. I only watched it dubbed, because it was part of,
Right.
The... not the Disney Afternoon, but, like,
the Toonami block.
No, it was a part of the, WB Afternoon.
See, I watched it was on the Toonami block.
I just remember Dick! The D-I-K.
Deek.
That's what I remember.
You just remember Dick.
I remember
Dick. That explains so much about you, Panda.
Doesn't it? Anyway, but I remember coming home from school every day at 2:30 and catching Sailor Moon from 2 to 3. And that was the dubbed version over here in America.
Yeah, it was dubbed on Toonami as well.
Yeah. So, I never saw
Darian!
Yeah, Darian, Sarita, yeah. Which, you know, there's a big difference between the character names and between the dubbed and the subbed. But then when they decided to release Sailor Moon... the original, all the way up to S on Hulu. They're going to release all of it. So
you just need to do it so I can marathon the ones that I didn't watch.
Yeah, so you need to go from R to SS.
Yeah.
And, but...
because I can't find any place...
but going back into the subbed version of Sailor Moon, if you watched sub, then you would not find Usagi or Serena... depending on what camp you're in, you wouldn't find there to be a difference because she's just as crybaby-y in the subbed version of the original run. The censorship is astounding between
really?
The two versions.
So they censored out a lot of
yeah,
the
and there's about 5 to 8 episodes missing from the dubbed version that didn't make it through censors.
Oh.
Here. So there's things that didn't make sense back then that I knew I was like, but then what? And then, but now watching the subbed version, I'm like, now that episode makes so much more sense. Because I didn't get some of the references and stuff that they made because I never saw it in context.
So I'm trying to find a reason to give Crystal another chance. Because I got to tell you, after the first episode, personally, I was like, meh.
If you read the mangas, which I do have them.
I have not read the mangas.
I have them all the way up to S.
I have
SS. But I have up to S. If you read the mangas, because just like what they did with Full Metal Alchemist, you know, that first run, they were like, we're going to do Brotherhood and we're going to make it closer to the original source material.
And Brotherhood was a shit, by the way.
Yes. So I feel like they're finally going to do certain things to Sailor Moon that they should have done in the initial run. And I'll tell you exactly what I feel those things are.
Yes.
For one, in the original... because, you know, Queen Beryl is the first, like, baddie that they ever encounter. In the manga, Queen Beryl was an earth witch, like an earthling, who was madly in love with Darian. So, when she finds out that Darian is, like, betrothed to, like, the moon princess, like, she loses her shit. They never address that in the dubbed version of Sailor Moon.
They
just made her bad. Because it's weird every time that once she figures out that Darian, you know, Tuxedo Mask is Prince Darian, all of a sudden she just wants to get Prince Darian, and the jump to her priorities changing doesn't make sense in the English dubbed version. Because they haven't given you the context of why she's so enamored with having him be all bad. Because he goes through that whole bad Darian phase because he's being mind controlled.
Yep.
They don't explain why she's doing that.
Yeah, I thought she was just being a bitch.
No, she was just in love with him and wanted to be with him. So I think they're going to do that justice. Going back to her generals, you know, Jedi, Zoisite, Malachite, and
yes,
the last one who's
yeah, 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 whatever. Yep,
the platinum.
Come on, because we got other stuff to get to too.
All right, they, for one, Zoisite was a dude, and I know in the English version they made her a chick.
Yep,
but those four generals that Beryl has were all generals of Darians, and each of them were betrothed to the princesses of the other.
I did not know that.
Of the inner Senshi, because, you know, you can't be double married.
Wait, but, that I did not know.
Yes. Because you lose...
Wait, that makes so much more sense now.
It does. Because there's five dudes.
Fucking
five
shit.
Chicks. And that's... They were all friends. They were... She gonna be my friend, you my friend.
We can be friends.
Exactly.
We can do it every weekend.
And that's exactly what happened. And you don't get that in the English version because, no. One... Yeah.
Didn't happen.
So so I feel like Crystal is going to take us down the road that will allow us
all
to
right.
see it. How
okay, so I'll give it two more episodes.
I feel like you should.
Two more episodes.
I feel like you should. To mention, you know, Neptune and Uranus, totally not cousins.
Yeah, totally not cousins.
I
did know.
They let them be lesbians.
You talked about it back in the day on podcasts.
Yep, they totally let them cousins. Be lesbians together.
Right. Okay.
In lesbians, lesbians.
In lesbians. All right. So the only other thing that I have is not anime related, and it's not technically manga because it's comics, but fucking it's Batgirl, so I gotta talk about this shit real quick.
So I thought Batgirl was getting a redesign.
Yes! Yes! New Barbara Gordon.
Ooh.
Batgirl.
Okay.
Okay. She's going to be based in Brooklyn.
Okay. Instead of Gotham?
In Gotham's Brooklyn.
Gotham. Okay. All right.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And the design is kick ass. So Cameron Stewart and Brendan Fletcher are taking over. And Babs Tarr is going to do the artwork. And, like, the first image I saw was from MTV News. Fucking how hot is that?
First of all... I love the things on her shoulders, for
the
one thing.
New Batgirl, the outfit is not, like, a jumpsuit. It's really basically just leathers. And it's a leather jacket and pants. Like, people are going to be cosplaying this Batgirl so easily.
A lot easier.
And it's going to be do-it-yourself easy.
She doesn't look hyperly sexualized or...
No, but totally, totally feminine. Definitely Batgirl. Like, the utility belt is, like, kick-ass. And so it's, like, deep purple, black, and gold. And she's definitely the younger...
Yeah, they're scaling her younger.
Barbara Gordon, I'm in love. I am in love. And Stewart said that basically the books are going to be more along the lines of, like, girls and Veronica Mars with, like, Sherlock thrown on top.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. So I think that this will be a Barbara Gordon Batgirl that more people will be able to
relate to.
Yeah. I really think so, especially the younger reader.
I absolutely agree with you.
So I'm totally excited for these books. I can't wait for them to start dropping. And I think the makeover starts in, like, October. So, you know, DC's excited about it. They're like, look, we're getting away from the spandex and the Doc Martens. Because the current Batgirl is very much more of the Amazon type.
Okay.
Which isn't bad. I'm not saying that at all. But she's a little less relatable because she's so more of a brute. Not brutal, but more of a brute.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people prefer Batgirl to be just a little more, I don't want to say ingenue, but I always preferred it when Batgirl was just a touch fragile so that she needed a Robin or a Nightwing or a Batman to back her up. And I'm not saying that I want my Batgirl to not be able to handle her own, because Cassandra Cain can absolutely handle her own, but to be humanized a little bit and balanced, that's what she relied on.
Well, I mean, if you subscribe to the whole Batman philosophy, because, you know, even though Batman, you know, trained himself to be able to fight, you know, he wasn't always about the violent part of solving stuff. Like, he was always looking for the humane way to address
with the like issue. Two with, exceptions.
Yeah.
Two.
Yeah, exceptions. Like two. Two, but we get three, so he's still in the good.
Yeah, he's still fine.
So it's I mean, you don't want someone to subscribe to either of the polar sides of the Batman philosophy.
Yep.
You don't want someone who's just all about the detective work and not really doing anything, because you're not really much of a hero if there's no action. But you also don't want to be all, I'm going to punch, and think later, either. Like, that's why they're great foils to each other, which is why Batman is so versatile, and people love the series, and they love the franchise of Batman.
I still kind of like the timeline, though, when he kills the Joker because of the shit that he does to Tim Drake.
I know.
I like that one.
I know you do.
I'm the only person who really liked that, though, because, like, you can't kill the Joker. I'm like, no, actually.
But by killing the Joker, if you go by the philosophy that all the villains are fractured psyches of actual Batman, then he's killing a part of himself.
Yes.
It defeats the
purpose. No.
It does.
No, because what the Joker did to Tim Drake, though, was, like, fucked up, and he needed to die.
But anyway,
I'm digressing. New Batgirl, holy shit, so excited. Can't wait for October. Panda, what do you have? I think I'm out of topics.
Yeah, there's one thing I want to talk about.
What?
So we all know, because I've talked about this on several shows way, way back in the day when I was really into manga, about the Kandachi case files, which several years ago when I found out they had done a run of anime, I was like, oh my god, yes. And they ended that on such a weird case that I'm like, there's so many more cases, like, when are we getting more? And then, like, nothing happened. Well, I just want to announce everybody that, for one, on Crunchyroll! Simulcasting right now is the file of Young Kandachi Returns, which is the second season. So, going back to the first one, just briefly, you know, like, with shows that we have out now, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where people are like, ooh, we have, like, a goofy detective who always gets things right, but you have to realize that he's just, like, a hyper-intensive cop, Sandberg in that show. Like, he's fully aware of everything that he's doing, and he's bored of everything, so he has to make things more fun and entertaining. Hajime Kandachi,
you
this character.
You think way more about Brooklyn 9-1-1 than I do. I'm just like, whee, oh my Sandberg!
Yeah. Well, that's the
everybody's
whole,
funny. Terry Crews is the man, and anytime he takes off his shirt, I'm happy.
Everyone doesn't realize just actually how secretly sophisticated that show is.
No, it is. It really is. But you get so lost in, like, the goofiness of it.
They're wagging the dog at you.
Yeah, they are.
And you're not paying attention to the tail. And that's fine.
Yep.
Because that's how the show is.
And then they smack me with the thing. I'm like, aw, you smart. Then,
yes, very smart.
That's why you up for it. Aren't they up for an Emmy?
Yes.
Yeah.
So going back, so...
Get on them.
Hajime Kandachi, who is the main character of the Kandachi Case Files, is very much like Sandberg's character. He's very much like Peralta, except, you know, one, he's like 16 and in school. But he's very lazy in school. He's not driven to do much of anything. He doesn't really try, but he's got this bloodline of, like, his grandfather, who was, like, this badass detective a long time ago. So he has all these innate skills to be able to detect and, you know, deduce all the stuff that happens between interactions with people. So whenever something happens, and sadly, in this dude's case, Hajime's case, there's always a murder of some kind. Like, someone's always dying near him and his friend, Miyuki, that he always has to get involved. So you always see both sides to his character, very much like Batman. Like, you see his playful, well, not Batman's, but Hajime's, playful, silly, carefree side until a murder happens that seems to be really close to home, like it affects one of his friends, or one of his friends gets cooped up into it. And then you see that serious, attentive, I'm going to do this the right way. And, like, the balance is just so appetizing. Like, I am drooling at the mouth just kind of talking about it right now.
You are actually drooling.
I am, because it's so exciting to me.
I think you should consult a physician.
It's so cool. So when I saw that they were doing the second season, for one, I was like, best day ever. And had to announce it on Facebook. But, I mean, they revamped the animation style, so it's very current. So think of the anime style for Sword Art Online, the
Ooh.
First one. So they've made it very nice. It's very flowy, and, you know, and they're also adhering to the structure that the mangas went, because, you know, the mangas weren't just like one case in one book. You had three books to a case. So So you never got the whole story right off the bat because they actually kind of wanted you to play along and try to surmise if you could figure out who the murderer was or who the culprit was. And they're doing the same structure with this anime series. And it's better than the first season because the first season didn't do that. They tried to cram the whole thing into one episode, which is too much. There's too much information.
Yeah. I hate when they do that.
Too much in one 30-minute setting for you to be able to go to try to figure it out. Like, they just don't give you the time. And in this season, they're giving you the time to watch everything unfold and discover it along with Hajime, which I love. OMG. So if you are a mystery suspense nut like I am, and you have not read the manga and or watched the first season, and the great thing about these seasons is because the structures are different and they're all different cases, you don't necessarily have to watch the first season to jump into the second one.
See, I like that, because sometimes
they're all vignette style, so you can just jump into, as long as you get the first one of that case, you don't have to go back.
See, I prefer that, because sometimes there are series that I'll find, like, the second series of on Crunchyroll or Funimation, but I can't find the first original, yeah. And I hate when I jump into one of those, and I really like where I'm at, but I don't understand some of the backstories, so I feel like I'm missing a piece, and because I can't find it, pisses me off.
That the only detraction is, even though the cases are vignette style, so you don't necessarily have to go into the first season for the cases, there are characters that I have now seen have had callbacks in the second season that, unless you've read the mangas or watched the first season, that you wouldn't know.
You don't understand that it's a callback?
You don't,
and why it's important?
Like, in one of the episodes that I watched, because in the books, Hajime's rival isn't necessarily another detective, but it's this lady thief. And, like, she's kind of like Catwoman, but without a cat suit.
Okay.
But, like, she always does costumes, so she's always a girl. But she doesn't look like she actually looks. And, like, he was trailing her for a while, but she always managed to, like, evade him. And she'd always get away with something, like a boat or, like, a giant diamond.
She just got away with a boat.
She always evaded him. Like, he just could not grab her, but she'd always reveal herself at the end, like, speeding away on the boat. Like, and he's been chasing her forever. And in the books, he does finally get her later on. And in the way that the series is going right now in the second season, we've now seen a callback to her, and she happened to get away with, like, a ton of gold on a speedboat. She has a thing about boats. But she reveals herself, and Hajime's like, I'll get you, gentleman thief, I'll get you. And, like, it's really, I was so excited to see her reveal, because I knew she hadn't, at the time of the cases that were going on, she hadn't been caught yet. So that means in this season we're going to see him actually get her. Which is going to be good. And we're also going to see in one of the episodes later on the road, I hope they go this way, because there was one book, there was two series of books, where the bad guy is actually framing Hajime. So everything is pointing to him being the suspect, and he's trying to prove his innocence while still trying to solve the case. So you've got this compound case on top of a case, and it's testing his will. I think it's his grandfather, but I don't know that for sure. I'm not sure.
But hopefully we'll see it and you'll find out.
I want to know. I want to know so bad. But anyway, so if you're into this type of stuff, like I obviously am, from like my slurpy mentions of it.
No, seriously, you need to stop drooling.
I am fucking salivating.
If any of that hits your laptop or your mic, we're going to have problems.
I'm screwed. But go check it out. Talk to me about it. I would love to talk to somebody about this series, because I actually think not too many people know about it.
So, on the final tip of what you don't know about and what you should check out, because I think I may make this like a running thing on the podcast, I am making a recommendation to Pandalicious right now for an anime to watch. It's new.
Okay.
It's streaming on the Crunchyroll, and I think it's on Funimation as well, called Akame Ga Kill. And
oh, I saw the
you need to watch
picture
it.
Of it.
You need to watch it. You need to watch it. You're going to fucking love it. And it also has like feels like right smack
dab. Right at the start?
Like, you can't even miss it. You can't even miss it.
Oh, boy.
Shit. So that's on the list. Also, for you guys, again, kind of like an homage, throwback to the old school, like, tip your hat at it, I saw the trailer for the live-action Lupin the Third movie. It doesn't look bad, guys.
It doesn't look bad?
No, it doesn't look bad. Hmm. Now, it wasn't subbed, so I have no idea what they were saying, so I could only go off the action, but
did Fujiko have big boobies?
She had decent boobs.
Oh.
Because she's an Asian chick.
Oh.
So she had decent boobs for an Asian chick.
But Fujiko had big boobies. It's
she has decent boobs for an Asian chick. Like, she has believable boobs, like, not a boob job boobs.
But Fujiko had giant boobies. It was one of the things that
Lupin
was all about.
They're good boobs. They're just not, like...
Fujiko boobs.
It's kind of hard to be, like, that anime boob and be, like, you know...
Functioning, I get
be it. Be a person, a real person.
Right.
It's a live action.
Okay.
She's got decent boobs for her frame. Okay. They're nice.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
It looks good.
Okay.
Like, she's a good-looking chick, which you need Fujiko to be a good-looking chick, because otherwise Lupin lusting after her
and doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make sense. It makes sense that he would lust after her.
Okay.
It looks good. So, I'm kind of excited. We'll find a link and we'll try to include it in the show notes so you can check it out. But you'll find other stuff like that, as well as things that we enjoy talking about, video games, anime, mobile, all that stuff, on our website, www.egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. You can also grab our podcast in the iTunes application, either on the desktop or on your mobile through the podcast application, by searching for Electric Sisterhood and hitting subscribe. We're also in the Microsoft Store. We're on VogNetwork.com. Make sure that you check us out over there, as well as the other amazing shows that are run by some of our great friends over there. Seriously, your nerd needs so satiated. You'll salivate like Pandalicious.
I'm still salivating.
We can also be found on Stitcher Radio, so you can subscribe to us there. If you're not living La Vida I or the Microsoft world and all that kind of stuff, you can grab it there. But you can always find our podcast on our home, away from home. That is our home, electricsisterhood.com. New episodes will be there forever and ever.
Forever and ever and ever and ever and ever.
We're also on the social medias because we believe in being social. So if there's something you want to check out, you want to share your opinion about any of the things that we've talked about, or suggest something for us to review, preview, or whatever, hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofash, or on the Twitter at ESHnews, and let us know. Holler at us. Make it so.
Holler.
We love interacting with you guys, and you fuel us. So if there's something you want us to check out, throw it our way. We'll, you know, spend some time on it. And hey, you could be internet famous, because if we talk about it because you mentioned it, we're going to mention you. See how that is? We're a tit-for-tat kind of place.
Tits.
Tits. That being said, we're not the only thing that exists in the Land of Ash.
Nope.
There are brand new episodes of No Borders, No Race held down by our homeboy KBD.
KBD.
Those go out on Tuesday, and if it's indie, J-pop, K-pop, it's...
Gay-pop?
K-pop.
Okay.
J-pop.
J. Elemental P-pop.
Or just baby metal, because I know that he's riffing on that right now.
Oh, man, he is so up on
it. He is up on the baby metal like nobody's business. Then make sure that you check out No Borders, No Race, B3Crew.com. You can check out our homeboy Deuce as well. It's been in all them beats that is going to move your feet. Trap, EDM, bass in your face. GeekAgro.com. Every Wednesday, new mix set. You want to check that out. And on Thursdays, if you've got issues...
He's got issues.
Y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy, Issues Program, call in live. Get the number. Call in, share your issues. Riff. Just chitty chat. It'll go up on the stream. Dude, you'll totally be internet
You'll
famous.
Heart it so much.
Definitely make sure that you do that. And then, like I said, for the rest of the week, they're all the represent sites that we affiliate with. We love. You gotta check them out. Check out our social. Interact with us. Trust us. You won't be bored. It's the time in the show where I turn to my sister and I now say, hey, sis.
Hey.
What shit you digging this week?
Boobs.
I'm not even mad at that.
Boobs. Boobs. What are you digging this week?
I gotta be honest, I'm kind of digging fiber optic cable, because I finally got everything in my entertainment center hooked up the way that I want, and the bass now rumbles my walls, so I'm happy. Fiber optic, it's the future. Not really. But as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys.
See you later.
Deuces.